This is fun! The FU Network!
Welcome to this FU Politics Report. I'm Stephen Kirzner. A commuter airplane filled with men, women, and children, families, traveling for business or leisure, suddenly blows up. The plane falls from the sky. All aboard are killed. The cause? Not mechanical failure, but a hidden onboard explosive device or military ordnance propelled from below. This tragedy has occurred more than once. Korean Airlines Flight 007, shot down by a Russian warplane. Iran Air 655, shot down by a missile fired from a U.S. warship. A Ukrainian passenger plane, shot down by the Iranian military. All of these incidents occurring during a time of military hostility between two nations, and all a result of an over-reliance on technology leading to human error that resulted in the deaths of human beings. When these tragedies occur during the fog of war, the news media tend to focus on the macro issues, geopolitical ramifications, domestic political fallout, what they see as the big story. That frenzied focus is intensified when dealing with the political fortunes of a deeply divisive and unpopular government, as has followed the most recent tragedy, the result of a clash between Iran and the United States, both countries facing significant internal distrust and disgust with their own respective governments. But none of that is the big story for those who have lost friends and loved ones aboard those doomed flights. Their grief may be temporarily exploited for ratings points, but inevitably the news media reduces the victims to statistics, props, and political theater, and the friends and families barely afterthoughts. But none of that is the big story for those who have lost friends and loved ones aboard those doomed flights. Their grief may be temporarily exploited for ratings points, but inevitably the news media reduces the victims to statistics, props, and political theater, and the friends and families barely afterthoughts. When I listed some of those tragedies a moment ago, there was one I left out. The bombing of Air India Flight 182, a terrorist act of mass murder that took the lives of 329 innocent passengers, 268 of whom were Canadian citizens, on a flight that took off from Montreal. Our purpose here today is not to point fingers at those responsible for any of the airborne slaughters, neither the macro nor the micro politics. It's to talk about the human dimension of these losses. It's to talk about the human dimension of the loss of these lives, as well as what was learned about the Air India bombing that should be guiding cooler heads in the days and weeks to come. Because for our guests, those who lost their lives that night have never become statistics or props. One of our guests was heavily involved with the families of those who lost their lives. The other, someone who lost her elementary school friend and classmate to that act of terror. Our guests, Talib Nur Muhammad, a former civil servant, past political candidate, vice president of the Olympics in Vancouver, and currently a tech executive, also serving on the board of the Canadian Air Transport Security Authority. Relevant to this program, Talib was the director of the Air India Review Secretariat, where he was responsible for all activities related to the review of the bombing investigation and the final report issued by Bob Rae, which involved coordinating with agents of the government, including the RCMP, CSIS, and Transport Canada, as well as with foreign governments, and working with the victims' families to ensure they were actively engaged. And he was responsible for the creation of the memorials. Talib didn't know the victims personally at the time, but over the last 15 years, and particularly during the process of the investigation, got to know many of the victims' families personally. Our other guest, Leanna Kirzner, in addition to being my wife, co-founder of the FU Network, host of the Hey Ladies podcast on our network, a broadcaster, award-winning TV writer, producer, performer, radio host, popular YouTuber, journalist, and public speaker. But today she's not here in any of those capacities. Today Leanna is here as a woman who, as a girl in first grade, lost her friend and classmate to a terrorist air tragedy. Talib and Leanna, welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start with you, Leanna. Aparna Gosain. Mm-hmm. What does that name mean to you?
Well, she was my friend in grade one, senior kindergarten in grade one. And she, her mother, and her younger brother were on Air India Flight 182. And that's what the name means to me.
Tell us a bit more about her. Tell us about what was like as a first grader to come face to face with a tragedy of unimaginable proportions that no first grader should ever have to know exists in the world.
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, who she was a bright light in the world. I mean, the thing I remember more than anything is her smile, right? I mean, that was the biggest thing about her. She was a really sweet girl. She was kind. And I still remember very vividly the day her father, who was the only surviving member of the family, called my mother to say what had happened. And of course, I mean, when you're six, my sister was, I think, 3 and a half at the time, maybe four. You don't know what terrorism is. And I don't even know if they knew it was terrorism at the time. It just, you know, the plane blew up and it was very sad. But what stuck with me the rest of my life is how other kids started trying to create some sense of fairness from the whole thing. And the character assassination that took place, again, among first and second graders, about, oh no, she was a really bad person after the fact. I remember somebody spreading a rumor that she was smoking on the plane right before it crashed. Like, people were trying, kids were trying to find
a rationalizations, it sounds like.
Yeah, some to maintain the fallacy of a just world. And that, I think, has stayed with me my entire life. Like, there were no counseling services back then. There was nothing to help kids contextualize what was going on. And that stayed with me for my entire life. I remember, you know, being a little kid and going, wow, how did they know that? And then I realized, wait a minute, they didn't know that. They were
about her smoking on the plane, that alleged nonsense. Yes.
Right. Like, that justifies death, right? Mass death. But there was no sense of scope. It was a personal loss. It wasn't like now, where every time something like this happens, there's this big, you know, there's all this attention. I'm not sure the attention on the schools is a good thing, but there is this sense that people care. And back then, it was a much more personal tragedy. It affected the, you know, they did a tree planting ceremony afterwards, you know, giving your first eulogy at 6 or 7 years old. That's a life-defining thing.
And this is in front of the school that the two of you attended.
Yeah, it's in front of the school. I think it's still there. The last time I went back, it was still there. But it was just, I don't know. I don't think there's any experience quite like losing somebody to Air India 182. It's this odd, it's like this forgotten tragedy in a lot of ways. Apparently it's not taught in schools. It's not studied. And, you know, the loss was real. And it's weird because around the similar age, the Challenger, you know, rocket ship also exploded. And that was a huge deal. And when you think about, you know, the comparative loss of life, it was small, it was far smaller. But I think that in Canada, we want to pretend stuff like that doesn't happen here. And so there was this urge to look away that's not happening now. Like, I think the government right now is handling things much better so far.
All right. Now, if you were to be someone who had to approach a 6 or 7 year old child now and tell them that their friend of the same age had died in this most recent downing of the airplane, what would you recommend is the best way to go about breaking that news and contextualizing it?
Well, I'm not a psychologist. I'm just somebody who had it happen to me. So obviously that's a very personal thing and it depends on the kid. Like, you know, a kid who's more worldly can understand a bit more. I mean, what's most important to a kid at that age is that their friend's gone, you know?
Let me ask you this then. What shouldn't someone do?
I don't think people should lie about anything, because that leads to a sense of betrayal later in life. As hard as it is for kids, I think it's always very important that they know the truth. Obviously, don't go into horribly gory details, but kids with proper, you know, intervention and stuff like that are very resilient, and it's much better. It, you know, one of the things I think the whole thing did for me is it made me much more compassionate for other people. I still wish it hadn't happened, but if there is a bright side, you know,
it's always good through tragedies to try to find something positive that we can use to help people who are still with us deal with this tragedy and help deal with people who they know who are dealing with this tragedy.
See, so, I don't see it that way. There's nothing good about tragedy. Like the way I, you know, the thing I've felt most acutely since the Ukrainian flight in Iran went down is just, you know, my God, and I have an idea how these people are feeling right now. And in the short term, nothing makes it better. Nothing does. And the best thing you can give somebody is like time and support and allow them to feel. Don't make it seem like they owe other people a quick recovery. Let them feel what they're going to feel. Allow them to ask questions. Allow them to even, you know, be angry if they want. That's an essential part of the process. And, you know, trying to scold somebody that, oh, there's some national implications to their personal grief, that's nonsense. People have to be able to feel what they're going to feel in a situation like this. And I think that that's something that tends to get missed in the crazy media scramble to cover this stuff.
Okay. Taleb, you heard what Leanna said. I think you probably agree with some of those, some of her conclusions. Tell me your thoughts.
No, I think what Leanna has described is bang on. I think one of the most important things is to really try to understand what those who are going through this need. I think it's very easy to make assumptions. It's very, very easy to kind of spend the time in the short term being in, especially now with everything being a public act of grief, to figure out how do we make sure these folks have the support that they need? How are they being listened to? How are they being heard? What are we doing as communities, as individuals, as government, as society to make sure that they have, as family members, as, you know, those who have been affected by this tragedy, friends and others, they have the support that they require to be able to move forward in the long term. And I think the way that Leanna describes it about making sure that we're really honest about what happened and making sure people are given what they need to be able to grieve and to move through this is critical.
Now, you learned this, these lessons, differently, in a different capacity than Leanna did. You learned them as part of the group that was charged with investigating what happened. And in doing so, you dealt with the families, which that must have been overwhelming.
It was, and you know, to this day, I think if I were to look at the single most meaningful thing I've done in my life, you know, it would be that work, because we had the chance to really learn from these families who had gone through the most unimaginable of tragedies. Something that, you know, very few people in the world can relate to, and to try and fix in whatever small way we could what had not been done right in the previous 20 years, and try and undo some of the hurt that the families were feeling, not just, you know, from the incredible loss that had happened when their family members were taken from them, but the way in which their government as Canadians had not responded over the preceding 19 years. And so we had a chance to do something that was meaningful for them, and to listen to them and to hear them and to really get answers for them as to what went wrong, and to make sure that we learned from that experience, you know, on a go forward basis. But the privilege of spending time with them, hearing them, listening to them, having them share their stories. And as they had to relive everything once the verdict, you know, came out, you know, trying to be there as best we could to be, you know, to hear and to be supportive was at once overwhelming, but incredibly, you know, incredibly meaningful.
Now, did you feel that at any point in time, the political process overshadowed the need, the human need, to deal with the grief of the survivors?
I would say, you know, in 1982, it was a different climate, right? I think it wasn't so much the political process, but a lack of, I think just a lack of awareness. I think the lack of awareness, you saw, you know, a plane full of a bunch of brown people, and the immediate assumption is, my goodness, we must talk to the government of India and deal with them. Mm-hmm. And not recognize at that point in time that Canada was already this multicultural place where all of these people who happened to be brown were actually Canadian. And their lives, their friends' lives, their family's lives here were being shattered. And so I think, you know, the recognition that this was a Canadian tragedy in some sense came 20 years too late for those who had suffered, mm-hmm. you know, from what happened in Air India. This time, I think that learning has been very, very clear, because you have, you know, I think you have a prime minister who folks have criticized for all manner of things, but nobody will ever criticize him for not being, you know, for not being sort of fully in tune with what empathy is. And I think this is one of those times where a country needs somebody at the helm who understands what empathy is. And so this was the important gesture of being there, recognizing this is a Canadian tragedy, being there at Parliament Hill during the vigil, going to Edmonton to meet the families. But this is step one of an ongoing process. And if you see the difference between what happened then and what happened today, the first response of government now is to make sure that families in this country understand that government is there to support them, to be there with them. And we've seen the entire country rally around the victims and the victims' families. And that is an important distinction, because in those moments of darkness, you know, at the very least, one can hope that the families know that there's an entire country behind them.
Okay. The difference in between 1982 and the government's response and now in how government talked to and addressed the families of these victims, what's the biggest difference that you see, and what mistakes were made back then that you don't want to see repeated now?
Yeah, and I mean, this is interesting, because if you hear the family members tell it, and you hear folks in government who were there in 1982, you know, tell it, there are so many things that are actually very, very much the same. And that is, I think, the first piece was making sure that government actually knew what was going on before speaking to the families. In 1982, families were getting different pieces of information or no information from different parts of government. There was a lack of ability to be able to actually comprehend what had happened, because we didn't think as a government at the time, because the government didn't think that this was a Canadian thing, then, you know, people were responding differently. And I think today, the important lesson is that we are stepping into this having understood, I think, what happened during Air India. The steps, what comes next, though, I think, is what is very important. And what comes next, and the mistakes that were made in, you know, in Air India around a lack of a cohesive response from government, a lack of collaboration internally, and an unwillingness or an inability, I don't know which it is, to bring family members into that process early, I think led to a whole lot of heartache and pain that could have been avoided. And I think the important thing now to avoid is to make sure that family members are consistently in the loop, and that the way that they are briefed is not by hearing something on the media. They need to be briefed, even if the briefing is there is nothing new to report, because over the next sort of, you know, 30-40 days of grieving and of trying to comprehend in a very real way what happened, the families are going to need to hear from government what is going on, what government is doing, how the government is going to deal with different elements of this piece. And then once that period is over, and you know, the real guts of the investigation starts, and the investigators are on the ground, and they open up the black box, and all of that stuff starts to happen, then that year-long period is going to be a very, very difficult period where family members are going to need to hear what's going on. They're going to need to be briefed. They're going to need to have officials explain to them what the process is, and government's going to have a process to address this in a meaningful way. They're going to have to assign people that will be there for different family members to relate to in the language that is most comfortable for them to speak. And then once the investigation is over, the report is issued, likely a lot of this will come streaming back. So you know, government will need to spring into action on that level again, not just to, not only to make sure people are able to walk through, understand, appreciate the detail that has gone to the report, to voice their agreement, disagreement, their concerns, and then to have that, again, that sort of caring and understanding piece around it. And then, of course, you know, how you memorialize it shouldn't take 20 years to memorialize the victims of this tragedy. So I think that if you look at the mistakes that were made during Air India, and you know, some of it had to do with some of the work that we did had to do with the actual investigation, with the actual, you know, the lead up to the trial, so on and so forth. But if you think about the human element, which is really what we're talking about here, you know, the mistakes that are avoidable are ones that are actually just, you know, I would say common sense things. How do we hear what these different family members need? Different family members are going to need different things. Some are going to have immediate financial crises. Some are going to have long-term, all are going to have this long-term emotional sense of loss. What services are required? What is required so that they, you know, they are able to continue to live? Those basic things, if we are able to address head on in a meaningful way in partnership with the families, are things that then will make the longer term much easier for them, and then by extension, you know, for the communities in which they live and for the country.
Okay. Now, Leanna, you've heard what Taleb had to say and his experience. And again, to the listeners, we're talking about something that happened in 1982, but human beings have not changed since 1982. Human beings have not changed in hundreds of years. Our primal emotions, our feelings of grief and loss and shock, it's not any different for the people who are suffering the loss of loved ones, friends and loved ones, as a result of this most recent tragedy. There's no difference. It's virtually as if time didn't exist between 82 and now. People feel the same things. And Leanna, do you feel, you know, you heard Taleb say that the important thing is get information, correct information out there. And while he emphasizes, of course, the family should hear about it first, how do you think we can get that? Because you mentioned that there was, in an attempt to create the myth, perpetuate the myth amongst young, you know, very, very young children, that it's a just world, so only the bad are punished. What is the best way that you can think of, as somebody who was a child back then and affected by this, to address this issue with sensitivity to younger kids, give them the information, and help dispel this notion that no, only bad things happen to bad people, and yet not let young people wind up fearing the world when they discover that bad things can happen to good people?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult question, because again, every kid is different. You cannot overcome family circumstances. So there's no panacea there. I think that one thing that is sorely lacking, and this caused me, like, there's this idea that, oh, it happened in 1982, so it's ancient history, it doesn't affect people now. I remember when this became an issue over a certain political candidate, and it became a racially charged back and forth in the media, I got really angry, because there was such a lack of public awareness, public education over what happened, that it became this political football. And that, to me, could have been solved with these sorts of things actually being taught in schools as part of Canadian history, so that it doesn't become racialized. One of the big things that drives me crazy about the way Air India is remembered or not remembered is that it's treated like an Indian thing, as opposed to it being a Canadian thing. You know, the lapses in security happened in our country. The problems at the airports, the lack of security screening happened in our airports. You know, it was our intelligence services that accidentally, whoops, got lost recordings and stuff like that. All that happened here. And so this idea that there are two tiers of Canadians, first of all, really upsets me. but also the idea that it becomes this political football ever. That should never happen. And I think that part of the reason it's so important to make this an us instead of a them in terms of public consciousness, and to not politicize this, to make it a human thing instead of a political thing, is to prevent that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now. That's the thing. I get that, you know, trauma is a very specific thing to a lot of different people, and we don't collectively still deal with trauma well, but we can do better. You know, a memorial, a sundial in a park somewhere is not going to help very much when there isn't a sense of community.
Okay. And when you were a child back then, what would have been the greatest help to you in dealing with the loss of your good friend?
People not smearing her name and reputation in retrospect, like having somebody tell me, you know, having someone to talk to about that. Like the big issue, people, I don't want to be too hard on the adults in these situations. The adults are grieving too. In a lot of ways, the adults grieve harder than the kids do, because they understand elements of it more. And to just leave it up to the parents and extended family who are hurting as well, you know, that's putting way too much on them. And, you know, there should have been more community leadership, giving space for kids to talk about it. I mean, these were people who knew her, but were not as close. Obviously those people those kids needed to talk about it in their own way and weren't given the opportunity to, and that's why they made up stories like that. And I think that, I mean, there are a lot of schools affected right now, and the ongoing community supports have to happen. This is not just going to go away in you know, a few weeks, a few months, a few years. This is a part of, it should be, our collective identity. And again, we need to get out of this idea that stuff like this doesn't happen in Canada. Stuff like this happens everywhere. And what makes us a great nation is not that this stuff never happens. It's that we're more compassionate and we have a greater sense of community. We don't turn against each other when these things happen. It makes us stronger as a country long-term, a more loving country as opposed to a more hateful country.
Okay. Talib, any comments on that?
No, I think this is absolutely right. You know, we have an obligation through these circumstances to learn from them. I think it's very easy to try and forget. It's very easy to try and say, okay, it's been dealt with, we've compartmentalized it, you know, memorial's been built, let's move on. But I think the way that we talk about these things, the way that we're open about them, the way that we learn from them, you know, it says a lot about who we are as a country. So, I mean, I've always said we should be thinking about ways to integrate what happened on that Air India flight as part of what kids learn in school, part of the fact that, you know, there are specific perils that affect, you know, that affect the world from which Canada is not immune. And, you know, at the same time, I think we have to also kind of take this approach that says, how do we ensure that we are setting everyone up to try and understand that there is this notion of common humanity? How do we set everyone up to know that notwithstanding what happens, we all share, you know, we all share in these types of things. If it happens to one of us, it happens to all of us. And so, and it could happen to any of us. And so how do we make sure that we are, you know, trying to build that notion of compassion among young people, among society, so that when these types of things do happen, we do see this type of outpouring that we are seeing now. And I think it's a tremendous testament to how far we may have come as a country, to know that people and communities are rallying around their friends and neighbors. But I have to say this, it starts at the top. If government takes the approach that says this is Canada's to own, Canada's to deal with, Canada's to grieve, Canada's to mourn, Canada, from which Canada will recover, that sends a very strong message to people. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen in 1982, and it has happened now. And I think, I hope that as a result, the victims' families see a lot more immediate support, immediate responsiveness. I think they will. I don't say awareness, but I think responsiveness to what they need. As a direct result of the fact that government is starting from the standpoint of this is Canada's, and that this is Canada's tragedy to work with together.
Which it speaks to what Leanna was saying, which is at the time, what she was hearing was that this was a matter, this was an Indian matter. It wasn't a Canadian matter. And you're saying that now, in the intervening years, we've discovered that, no, there is no such thing as a matter that really is important to Canadians of Indian background and the rest of us, that we're all Canadians and we all feel this. And let me ask you, based on Leanna's comments, if there's an educator, a teacher listening right now who has not yet received the information package on how to deal with this, or the information package is just so generic that it's very hard to apply it, what would you tell them to do, and most importantly, not to do, to help children who were Leanna's age, 7 years old at the time, and older? What should they do and not do to help children contextualize what is something that no child should have to contextualize?
Let's start with what I think they should not do. I think that they should not, and this is a message to not just to educators, but to anyone. No one should politicize this. Whatever happened, whatever the circumstances around what happened, people who are grieving for the loss of their loved ones. And I think that has to be the starting point. So politicization by anyone of this is not gonna add value or be helpful other than to that individual's own ridiculous agenda. So what I would say is, from a starting point, let's make sure people are focusing on this as what it is, as a human tragedy. I would be asking young people what they would feel like if this happened to one of their friends. How do they relate to it? And how would they come to understand this type of thing happening in their community and in their homes? And so many provinces, so many communities have been affected that I think that's a very easy thing for people to try and, you know, have to discuss. But I don't say easy in the sense that, you know, easy to discuss, but I think it's a point that should hit home quite easily. But that's where I would start. I would start by asking, you know, by really digging into what this would be like if we were in those situations, if these were our friends or our family members, and how we would want people to respond and how to understand what had happened. That is, I think, something that is okay. Important. I think it was lacking in 82. The other thing I think that's probably... that's probably at least as important is trying to make sure that there is a way for this to be contextualized. So one of the things that I suggested to folks, and I haven't really done anything about it, and I don't know that anyone, that it's really not something that can be done other than by people who are willing to have these conversations. Just see whether people who have been through this before, whether there are family members from Air India, family members potentially from 9/11, who are willing to speak to the family members to share with them. Because remember, the class of people, the number of people who have dealt with this globally is so small. And the number of Canadians, unfortunately, has gotten larger now as a result of this. But it's a small number of people who will understand, who will ever understand what this is like. And so trying to see if there is a way maybe to create a network of support, to create opportunities for those who have been through this before to be there, to hold the hands of those who are going through this today because of that shared experience. That may be one thing that we can start to think about, you know, broadly, whether it's in schools or in other places.
Okay.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, Leanna.
I think one of the things, especially with younger people, but everybody, I think we undervalue or we completely discount the value of compassion as a society.
Some people sneer at it, quite frankly,
yeah,
in this day and age.
There's this real emphasis on fighting, you know, fighting. You have to fight. And what they've actually found is that practicing compassion, developing your compassion skills, can allow you to experience this grief, painful emotions, and not look away. And one of the things that I am glad for is that when 9/11 happened, it wasn't, like, in my mind, it wasn't a Muslim thing, for lack of a better term. It was a terrorism thing. and the identities of the people who did it, the identities of the people that they were fighting against, isn't as important as this human instinct to do harm. You know, so when other people were fighting about Sunni and Shia, or, you know, Khalistani versus Indian or whatever, you know, fighting about the Golden Palace, it's like, and most people are like, what exactly? This stuff is, you know, not as important. You know, the IRA does it. Like, this is something some people do to solve problems. And it never solves problems. It creates problems. And I think that is the lasting lesson from this stuff, that teaching people in their own lives, going out and hurting someone because you're hurt, never solved a damn thing. All you do is create more hurt and make people more afraid. And I think that what I wish the message of this stuff, you know, I find it healing to see how different the response has been this time around, to see it being sort of a national coming together moment. And I would like to keep that going in the weeks and months to follow, when we start talking about, you know, the cost of irregular migrants or, you know, refugees or all that stuff. I would like people to remember how they feel now, because the more of those programs that we invest in, the less of this stuff that we're going to have to deal with long term. Granted, we need global partnerships in that, but this is a time to remember that you know, Canada does a lot of things right, and we need to hold in our hearts and remember the stuff that we do right. So when it comes down to this political bickering about related issues, we keep our eye on the ball.
Okay, valuable point. And the last question I want to ask to each of you, and I'll go first back to you, Leanna, then over to you, Taleb. Do you think it's possible in this hypercharged, divisive, partisan world we're living in now, do you think it's possible to keep this from being heavily politicized and used as artillery by one side or another in political battles? Leanna?
Well, somebody's going to do it. Somebody's going to try, because that's what politicians do. They take the shot, right? It's a question of, do we fall for it? It's a question of, is it effective politics? You know, when people try to adopt the politics of division, are we wise enough to go, no, 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 that's what causes these problems. That's not what solves these problems. No problem was ever solved by slamming a door in someone's face. No problem was ever solved that way.
I'd love to put that on a t-shirt, quite frankly. You know, and I don't mean that facetiously. I mean that's the way political messages get across these days, bumper stickers and t-shirts. And no problem was ever solved by slamming a door in someone's face is a great way to sum up the cesspool politically that we found ourselves in now. Good points.
If you feel like you want to do something, the best thing you can honestly do, and I know this seems stupid, it seems counterintuitive, but the truth is, the best thing you can do is have a discussion, a caring, not just civil, but a caring, meaningful discussion, and really listen to somebody who has a different viewpoint from yours. Because if people feel heard, they don't feel like they have to take the next step and the next step and the next step. If whether someone's grieving, whether someone's angry, whether someone feels an injustice is committed against them, if they feel heard, they are far less likely to result in extreme stuff. And unfortunately, we don't have many examples in the greater world of that right now. We are fortunate in Canada that, for whatever reason, we're pretty darn good at that. We can talk about tough stuff and not, you know, do rotten things to each other, but we can always do better. You know, we can always internalize that message more. We can always have the reminder that listening to somebody isn't going to hurt you long term. You know, it's not going to infect your mind. It's not going to make you suddenly a completely different person or believe totally different things. And if you got friends or if you got people around you who can't accept you having a conversation with someone who disagrees with you, those people are not actually your friends.
Okay. Taleb, your final word. Is there a way to keep this from being just turned, these human sacrifices turned into political fodder for one group or another?
So I think that's on all of us. That's on all of us to make sure it doesn't happen, right? So I think at the political level to start with, it would be ill-advised for anyone in Canada, any politician, to use this to take a swing, because the response will be poor. And I think if you think about moments where things like this have been handled with dignity, when the Liberal government lost the election, when Paul Martin lost and Stephen Harper took over, the worker around Air India, the handover of this process from Minister McClellan to Minister Day was handled incredibly well. I mean, we were all there as part of that process. Minister Day showed as much compassion, as much desire, as much caring to make sure things got done properly, as did Minister McClellan before him. And so I think there are examples, shining examples in our history on things like this where we have done it right. And there's lots of where we've done it wrong. So I would say to anyone that is thinking about using this as a way to take a swing politically at anyone around how this tragedy is being handled, be careful. Be careful, because it's not a winning proposition. Now, there are lots of comments we can make around whether we had had diplomatic relations with Iran, this, that, and the other. Those are all important geopolitical questions and important international relations questions for us to answer. But as it relates to the victims, as it relates to what we are dealing with today, the most important thing that we can do is to remember that, number one, we are all Canadian, and our response will not be judged by who got a political point in, but how our citizens felt at the end of it. That's number one. And I think that will set the example internationally, because if this is seen as what it is, a remarkably horrible human tragedy, people will start to see the people who were affected by this as victims, as people that were impacted, whose families have been shattered. And hopefully that makes us more compassionate in thinking about the other geopolitical issues that we are dealing with, whether it's migrants, whether it's refugees, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, you know, the more that we can be seen, all of us, regardless of political stripe, to be statesmen and women in how we approach this issue, the more that I think we will show this sense of national unity around this, which is, I think, the best way to avoid politicizing it. If people see unity and cohesion around making sure we do what is right, not what is expedient, you will see that the response very, very, very quickly will define itself.
Okay, and I lied. I'm going to ask you one final question. Is there any legitimacy to introducing the element of the political, not to score points, but to examine the political failings that led to most recent tragedy and led to Air India and KAL 007 and all of those other airline tragedies of a similar nature? Is there a legitimate is there legitimacy to trying to explain to people why this happens politically, and to activate some people from apathy to get involved to make sure this doesn't happen going forward? Taleb, I'll go to you, then back to Liana.
I would say if there is, it's not right now. I would say this is not the time for that. I think, you know, the time right now is to deal with the grief and the issues and the challenges that people are facing. There will be a time. There will be a time to discuss what happened, to make sure that things like this are prevented. In Air India's case, that should have happened much sooner. You know, we know exactly what happened with the investigation, et cetera, et cetera. But because of what this is, what has happened this time, we have an admission of guilt from Iran. I think what is important now for us to do is to deal with the issues at play and at hand, which are making sure the families are supported and that we are actively engaged as Canadians in that investigation on the ground, that we have the folks on the ground so that we can get the facts. So once an opinion is rendered, we can come back and speak to it meaningfully. And then I think there is a time for discussions of international relations and geopolitics and how to ensure that we are global citizens and global statesmen, and Canada's role in the world is one of a peacemaker and a peace builder. I think that is an important place for us to get to, but I would certainly not advocate for that happening today.
Liana?
Yeah, I mean, It's a tough one because it's one of those things an activist will tell you, well, the time to do it now, the time to do it is now. And I don't, again, I don't want to silence any families of victims who are victims themselves from saying what they need to say in these times. Like, we have to remember the people who are directly grieving, they need to be able to get certain feelings out, even if it's just to get it out. So I don't want anyone to feel stifled. There's also a real guilty backlash from some people involved in these things. And I think there was an element of that in Air India. I mean, right now with the situation of Iran, we're talking about collateral damage in a warfare situation versus, you know, an act of terrorism. Those are different things. There's time to talk about them. The problem is that once the immediate pain is gone, this sense of apathy settles in because people don't want to go back to hurting. They didn't like the way that felt. They didn't like feeling guilty. And so they try to just sweep it away and things don't get done. And that's why I think that an ongoing dialogue about compassion is very important. I mean, we're kind of fortunate in Canada that we don't have to deal with this stuff all that often. You know, there are communities in America who have to deal with, you know, mass shootings and all that stuff on an ongoing basis. And those communities are traumatized because of the politics that happen, because certain political forces have gotten so good at shutting down dialogue, discussion. And again, if you can allow yourself to feel pain and, you know, empathic sorrow and not have it eat you from the inside, you can remember how this felt. You can get a greater sense of, instead of, I didn't like feeling this way, I'm going to shove it away where I never have to see it again. You can take it with an, I don't want anybody to have to feel this way.
Okay, let me ask you, how do you respond to those people in social media specifically, which is where they live, who live for exacerbating pain and showing no empathy, and who bait and mock people showing empathy? Is there a way? You don't respond.
You do not respond. If it happens to a third party, contact them privately, let them talk privately. Like, even if it's just to say, wow, that guy was really an asshole. I mean, I've been going through this lately. People look at me, they don't think I'm going to be affected personally by stuff involving brown people. That drives me crazy. And so they act like assholes. And so, you know, I made a comment initially about, you know, when it was, I didn't believe for a second that this is coincidental, you know, because of my own experiences. But I said before it was known, it's like, it doesn't matter what brought down that plane. People are hurting. And that's what matters right now. But then when it did turn out that it was, you know, collateral damage and war, and I hate that term, I made a comment that, like, you know, in a just world, all sides of that conflict would provide some reparations to the family. And I had a whole bunch of Americans who had, like, armed services, proud veteran in their profiles, just go, nope, nope, nope. They just noped all over it because of the guilt, right? Because people really struggle with responsibility, because people, instead of feeling responsibility, they feel blame. And I just didn't respond to any of them. I mean, the one hand, yeah, I made a political statement. I have to wear that. I have to take some responsibility. But these are not people coming at this from a rational place. They are not rational actors. They're having this sudden knee-jerk emotional response. And there's no fire extinguisher for that. You have to just let that burn out. Engaging in that is not going to go anywhere good.
Okay. And I think that, and I asked you that because you are a noted expert on the internet and internet culture and dealing with these kind of trolls, as well as somebody who has a history of chasing away some of the biggest, most scary trolls that have impacted and chased a lot of people off social media. You have a history of chasing those people off social media. So I thought it was important to get that information and opinion from you.
I credit my life experiences with allowing me to do that. It has cost me not to shut out people on the right. You know, it has cost me not to just refuse to see somebody with more right-wing politics, or in some ways more left-wing politics. I consider myself a leftist. People who are more left-wing than me don't. I refuse to shut anyone out just based on their politics. And that is because of, you know, the things I have experienced in my life. And, okay. You know, because I was aware so young of what happens when one group of people doesn't like another group of people and they feel oppressed, and so they decide to act out and punch up, you know, I can't participate in that. A person I don't like, a bad person, is still a person. And it affirms my humanity, my human dignity, to treat that person like a person, you know?
Okay.
I'm waiting for that phone to stop ringing.
Yeah, I think that phone is telling us that what you said is a good place for us to take this in for a landing. Sorry, that was a terrible pun and not intended. Sorry if that sounded disrespectful.
Yeah, can I just sort of say one more thing?
Yes.
Like, I really think that even if nothing's going on, it takes nothing out of you as an individual to be unnecessarily kind to another person. It takes nothing out of you. And everybody's got something going on. You know, everybody's, especially now with the aging population, everybody's lost someone or is in the process of losing someone to, you know, some sort of degenerative disease or something like that. Everybody suffers loss. Everybody suffers pain. And the only thing we can do in our lives is minimize the guilt we feel for turning away or neglecting that pain. And okay. And it helps a lot more. You deal with people who are not being very nice when you know you did everything you could.
Okay.
And that's a lesson I learned specifically from the Air India tragedy.
Okay. Great place to bring this full circle. Talib, thank you for being here, providing the kind of expertise that only the director of the Air India Review Secretariat could possibly provide as far as context and history, how far we've come, what we were like then, what we're like now, what needs to be done now. I appreciate you taking the time out to join us and provide that very human element and human dimension and tell us how to avoid making those mistakes of the past. Thank you, Talib.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
And Leanna, no doubt this was very painful for you. I know that the loss of your friend has never gone away and has motivated you in many ways to build bridges between people. So thanks for joining us.
Loss is a part of life. Being a jerk doesn't have to be.
Okay. Thank you for listening to us here on FU Politics Report. I'm Stephen Kersner.